The Arctic nations have plenty of things they don't agree on, but when and if they do agree, it could easily become a treaty. Now the United States is about to step into the chairmanship of the Arctic Council. What should its priorities be? Good morning, I'm Steve Heimel. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. In this show, we'll get a take from the federal and state government sides of it. But what do you think the priorities ought to be? Toll free, the phone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. We are setting the agenda today for the Arctic Council on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, the first take for many Alaskans might be, oh, well, what else is new? I mean, you got these governments and these diplomats, and they get together and they talk, and they've been doing it for years and years, and what's the concern to me? In this case, the concern is huge because it's the Arctic Council, and it actually has power. It's actually the Arctic nations and the indigenous groups. So it's really pretty interesting situation. And I've asked a panel to come here, but mostly I want to hear from you at 1-800-478-8255 about what the United States might should do, and the state of Alaska, the only Arctic state, might should try and push for during the American chairmanship of the Arctic Council, which is coming up later this year. So joining me across the desk is a former candidate for lieutenant governor who ends up being the Arctic advisor to Alaska Governor Bill Walker. Craig Fleener, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege to be here.
I think we must have had you on when you were running.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's great to have you back. And now you have this new role advising the governor. And I'll tell our listeners just to begin with that you come in here with a head cold and your voice is wearing out. And you're going to have to participate in a panel in the Arctic Council tomorrow at the Alaska Forum on the Environment. So I really appreciate you coming in. We're just gonna put up with it.
We'll do the best we can.
Yeah. So you know, just basically on the first, you know, blush, has the governor have time to focus on this very much yet?
Well, yes, because if you consider that. When you talk about Arctic issues or what it means to be an Arctic state or Arctic policy in general, the governor really focuses on it every day because most everything that we do in Alaska has some impact on the Arctic, whether it's looking at development, whether it's studying climate change, whether it's looking at impacts to communities and coastal erosion, whether it's subsistence opportunities. All of those, you know, if they're in the right part of Alaska, are definitely Arctic policy issues. So the governor is in knee-deep in Arctic policy all the time. As a matter of fact, most of us as Alaskans are, even if we realize it or not. So one of the things that I've been telling folks to think about is start calling yourself an Arctic resident, or if you're not an Arctic resident because you don't live above 66, then you're a subarctic resident, and the things that you do and say will have an impact, or the Arctic will have an impact on you. So the involvement, the participation, the thoughts of Alaskans are critically important to what we do in the Arctic.
Yeah. Well, now, I don't even know how it's going to work physically in terms of how often there's meetings and what level of people are meetings, but theoretically you have the Secretary of State and you have, it's not even clear to me how the state and the feds relate on this situation. But I want to go to the federal side because one of the point people there is a senior advisor to Catherine Sullivan, the head of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Dave Kennedy. David has been, well, I think you were an undersecretary, a deputy undersecretary for a while and a number of other things and know, and probably many Alaskans know you. Welcome to Talk Alaska, David.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
And I wonder why you decided to pitch in on this. You didn't really have to. You already did your time. And now here's this big, huge diplomatic thing just with all sorts of trouble involved with it. And there you are, jumping right into the hot kitchen.
Well, I've not had it put to me quite that way before. Maybe I should have thought this through a little more carefully.
Craig is already ready to.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm saying Craig is already ready to turn up the heat here.
I have had a long, long-standing interest, passion, I think might be a better term, for the Arctic. When I came out of college, I ended up in the Air Force. I ended up as a pilot, and my first assignment was in Alaska at Elmendorf Air Force Base. And so I flew out of Elmendorf for 4 or 5 years, flew extensively throughout the state, as well as in Canada and Greenland. So I really got the Arctic bug, if you will, very early in my career. And throughout my career, have come back to Alaska and worked on a variety of projects, including I was a science coordinator for the federal government on Exxon Valdez oil spill. I worked extensively in trying to do cleanup and restoration of the Pribilof Islands, and so on and so on and so on. So throughout my career, I've had the opportunity to work and contribute to issues in Alaska. And when I retired, I knew I didn't want to continue to do everything for everybody, which is kind of my position before I retired. But Dr. Sullivan said, if you want to come back and focus on one issue, well, that'd be fine with us. And so I said, boy, if I could do that, the Arctic is an incredibly important issue, evolving, becoming more and more important nationally and internationally. And I'd like to be a part of that. So that's why I came back. I don't call me crazy, but what's going on in the Arctic is such a fascinating, dynamic thing. I wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, and so there's been a good deal of work that's been put together by you, and I would assume a number of staffers, but I mean, you're the guy in front of it all, the various thematic areas of things that might be priorities for the U.S. chairmanship. Maybe you can tell me how these, I mean, I've seen the PowerPoint, Craig's seen the PowerPoint, it's a very interesting set of things of many, many Alaskans, I think, can sign on to most of them. How did that get developed?
Well, first of all, it's the Department of State is the federal agency that is responsible for the U.S. involvement in the Arctic. But just as you suggest, the Department of State works very closely with all the other federal agencies to create the policies and suggestions. And so as you're suggesting, we do now have a set of priorities that the U.S. has presented to the rest of the council as suggestions for what, when we take over the chairmanship in April, we would like to have to pursue. Those suggestions are still have to be approved by the council. This is a consensus-based organization, and so sometime before we take over in late April the chairmanship, there will be a final discussion. So this is a little bit preliminary, but if you don't mind, it probably to set the stage would be good for me to just go through. There's three basic initiatives, all based on Arctic countries needing to be collaborative and cooperative across the board on everything they undertake. But the three initiatives are Arctic ocean safety, security, and stewardship, yep, improving economic and living conditions, and addressing the impacts of climate change. There's a number of subtopics under each of those, which I'm happy to quickly introduce if you'd like, because those do get into, I think, some of the more specifics that I think the residents of the state would be interested in. But I know time is critical, so you tell me. Do you want the subtopics?
Not at the moment, but I.
Okay.
But I'm just trying to get a first blush on how things are going to just work during the process of chairmanship. But I will bring one up, and that is the impacts of climate change, because there's clearly some scientific advice underlying this thematic area, which includes both methane and black carbon And that's almost code in the scientific community to not talk so much about carbon dioxide and talk about other things that actually are just as bad or worse that are warming the climate even now. And if the nations could all agree on initiatives on these two things, I think many people would be quite surprised at how dramatic the results could be.
I guess I would agree with that. And as I mentioned, under each of these three themes, there are some subtopics. And at least within the United States, the discussion has led to kind of leaders, if you will, for each of the different topics. And so when you talk about methane and black carbon, two things that are specifically called out by the U.S. as needing to be priorities, EPA, along with two or three other federal agencies, kind of chair that discussion. And then you have working groups through the Arctic Council that actually then take these topics, if they're addressed, and then try and move them forward, move the ball forward, and come to agreement on how best to use the information that we have, how to develop new science and information, and then what to do about that to do some mitigation and adaptation.
Got it. Yeah. Well, tell me, Craig Pleaner, how is the state looking at itself fitting into this process with the State Department and so forth? Are you feeling welcome in the process so far?
Well, we do feel welcome. The State Department has reached out. David has reached out. I think we're going to have a pretty good working relationship with a large swath of the huge number of federal agencies and organizations that are going to be involved in this over the next couple of years. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're adopting what would be our priorities. There are some examples, like we're also concerned about climate change. We want to understand what's going on with the climate. Our universities lead many universities in doing climate research, but we look at that in terms of adaptation. How are we going to adapt to the changes that are happening around us? What can we do to ensure that we have a good quality of life here in Alaska with the changes that are happening? We don't look at it in terms of trying to stop climate change because we think that that's out of our reach, out of our capability. But we certainly can do something about adaptation. So we're going to continue down the path of wanting to know more about the impacts of climate change and what we can do to survive those. Other areas that I really wish were priorities from the State Department or the U.S. chairmanship would be issues that we talk about in Alaska all the time, like food security and economic development. Now, there is a small economic development component, but it's certainly not the same level of economic development that we're interested in. And as you're aware, and many of your listeners are aware, if not all of them, the state needs to look at diversifying our economic situation. And so we need to have a very strong focus on economy and a diversified economy and a strong economy. And so we wish that our federal counterparts would spend more time on that. And food security for Arctic people is always an issue. We need to make sure that...
So there's kind of an emphasis area with regards to improving economic living conditions and sanitation and things of that nature.
Yeah, no, those are part of it, but I don't think they're a strong enough influence, and I don't think we're going to see the kind of work done at the federal level to ensure that folks have good quality food security and to work directly with Alaska to boost our economic standing. For example, what do we do to generate revenue in the state? Well, right now, we're looking at more oil and gas development opportunities. So what we would hope for is that we could partner with our federal partners in a better way to have a better, stronger relationship so we can go forward more quickly towards developing those resources while we're looking at expanding and looking at other economic areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know that I will say this, Dave Kennedy, Alaskans get pretty worked up about the issue of food security. It's not just there are the subsistence resources on one level, but there's also just the fact that we don't produce our own food enough. We really like to. And how that's done, I don't know. I know the fisheries enter into it. But I'm thinking, you know, that's an area that probably other Arctic nations also hold in common.
Well, I think they do, and the food security is certainly not a foreign topic to me. And in fact, I think the state and its representatives have worked pretty diligently to make sure that food security doesn't fall off of the screen. But as Craig says, it's not called out probably in the manner that maybe the state would like to see it. But it isn't a significant issue, and I think that's understood and appreciated by folks. It's just not exactly called out maybe as strongly as the state wants. So,
yeah.
But very familiar with the issue.
And I'm sure, you know, there. I hesitate to even go to the oil and gas development issue because you're just basically going to deeply disagree. But I think I should give you a chance to Dave Kennedy to respond a bit. Craig is saying we've got all these oil and gas resources in Alaska, and we don't want to see the door closed to developing those. We're doing everything we can to see more of that developed. And of course, I don't think that the Obama administration has that as much of a priority at all.
Well, we're on sensitive ground, as you're suggesting. I do not think that the federal government suggests that oil and gas shouldn't be developed. I think they have some reservations, and that's probably what you've been hearing recently from the administration. But there certainly is no policy against development of oil and gas, and I think the Obama administration has actually supported that to some degree. Everyone that is involved and understands Arctic and Alaska issues understands the importance of that revenue, and of course we all have been following, as I do, especially with my Arctic responsibilities, the drop in oil prices and what that's done to the revenue streams for Alaska. And
oh boy.
I think we all understand that diversification is an important thing for the state to be considering. But on the other hand, oil and gas really is the primary source of revenue, and I don't think anybody disputes or debates that or says that there shouldn't continue to be some development. Just it's where and how.
Yeah. We're talking about potential priorities for the Arctic Council as the U.S. becomes chairman of the Arctic Council later on this year. And we have Dave Kennedy, senior advisor for the Arctic region to NOAA, with us by telephone from Washington, and Craig Fleener, the governor's special assistant for the Arctic. So we got a great panel, but we want to hear from you at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call from Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. And Tom joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tom.
Hi, thank you very much, Steve, for taking my call.
Sure.
Getting into the Arctic is probably the toughest thing of all. Since statehood, Alaska's done wonders in building runways and villages and telecommunication systems and roads in the rail belt and other places where they can be done. The former governor wanted a roads to resources, and he, of course, was thinking gravel and asphalt. I would suggest instead expanding the marine highway so that it doesn't just serve a little bit of the Aleutians once a year, but when the ice is out, goes all the way up to Barrow or Prudhoe, but particularly Kotzebue and Nome. And that would reduce shipping costs significantly and put Alaska as a state definitely into those seas. I mean, we have this vast amount of coastline that is unserved except for some private barge companies and tug companies. We could radically reduce the costs of getting out there and getting building materials, drills, and other things for mineral exploration if people are into that. And if you want to get further interior, we do what they did in the 19th century and build flat-bottom riverboat ferry system and use our rivers as highways to get into the interior and open up a whole lot of villages to the outside world at far less costs than flying. That's the heart of it, is that Alaska needs to participate. We don't need to be building Puget Sound day boats like the previous administration is having done in Ketchikan right now to run day runs. We need ocean-going marine highway vessels with cabins and galleys and all the amenities that can respond to shipwrecks and other emergencies and access places like Kotzebue and Nome. And if there's a question of docks, you can build lighter barges that are connected to the shore with underwater cables so that the deep water vessel can load and unload onto the barge, and the barge can be effectively towed to shore in shallow waters like Nome. We need to open up Port Clarence, or a big port up there. And I know these things are expensive, but if you abandon the crazy super mega projects and build boats in Alaska or hire Alaskans to get people around, it might make a lot of sense.
Tom, that's some beautiful set of comments. And of course, you do know that the Coast Guard has now set down its proposed traffic lanes through the Bering Strait all the way down to Dutch Harbor and Yumak Pass, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've been following these things for decades.
Right. And, of course, you're already hip to the Port Clarence thing. I think, you know, that is beginning to move. You know, how quickly is another thing. I mean, money's short everywhere, but some of it's happening. But that's a really beautiful vision, I think.
Just quickly, this is the kind of thing that the federal government could really help leverage. Uh-huh. I mean, it is in the national interest to not necessarily counter whatever the Russians might do on their side of the strait into the Arctic Ocean and supervise the traffic coming through. But, I mean, I'm not talking about building destroyers or battleships. We're talking about ferry boats and maybe some degree of ice capability, but really just opening up all these towns and villages that have been isolated to strictly aircraft and, of course, the Iditarod.
Yep. Thank you, Tom.
Okay, well, I'll sit and listen, and right. I don't think I have much more to say, but maybe you'll let me back in, or I'll just let other people talk.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Tom. Craig Fleener, I'll ask you to respond to that a bit.
Well, I think that is right on target with what Alaskans in general need to think about is, what are our infrastructure needs and how are we going to meet them as we go on? You know, as far as Arctic nations go, and one of the reasons why food security is probably much more of an important issue here is because we lack this infrastructure to connect our communities. And we have a very difficult time getting from point A to point B across Alaska. And without infrastructure, we're not going to be able to do a good job of meeting our own needs. So that those points are right on target. I'm not a marine highway expert, so I'm not going to act as if I am. Having grown up in Fort Yukon, I'm definitely an interior boy. But I can tell you that we need to advance the discussion about how we're going to connect our communities up, how to make them more viable, make them sustainable, and access the resources that are out there so we could have a diversified economy.
Well, I got to say, you know, that it really doesn't look good if you get the Office of Naval Research to build this wonderful landing craft to go back and forth between Anchorage and Kinnickerm, and somehow the politicians can't ever get it operating. Yeah. That can be a little embarrassing in terms of federal investment, if you know what I mean.
Well,
sure you do.
One of the downsides we have is a small population, and sometimes we build big, expensive things that we can't afford to run. And I think we need to figure out a way to downsize our dreams to something that's doable. And too many times across Alaska with our infrastructure projects, we dream big. And we've done some amazing things. Look at the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. So we know we can do it, but we have to make things that are sustainable long into the future for small groups of people to be able to afford to keep running.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Elston, joins the program from Anchorage. Elston, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, Steve. Thank you for taking my call. And Craig, congratulations on your appointment to the Arctic Policy Council.
Thank you.
I think it's a great appointment. I, like you, am an interior boy. I was raised there all my life. I've got about 30, 40 years of development experience in mostly rural Alaska, which brought me into a lot of contact with the federal government. And it occurs to me as I'm listening to this conversation that we're really engaged at the Arctic policy level in a diplomatic relationship. Not only with other countries, but with our own country as well. And one of the things that I am really sick of hearing, Craig, and I'll be quite blunt about this, is the Fed bashing that goes on by our politicians. It makes me sick. You know, we walk around and act like we own Alaska, and in fact, we only own 103.5 million acres. We need to partner with the federal government if we're ever going to succeed in building a viable future for the state of Alaska. And I think one of the things that you can set as our Arctic policy point person is a tone. And you can communicate to these half-baked politicians that tone it down, let's act like adults. We have to develop a long-term relationship with the federal government. They own 240 million acres, and that's just the plain fact. And I'm just sick to death of listening to these Tea Party people run around and spout and embarrass us. And I really hope that you can help in that way.
Well, it's certainly an objective of mine, and I can't agree with you more that we need to do a better job of partnering. Now, I am a little bit guilty. I've done my fair share of Fed bashing as well, so I will be at least be honest with you on that. But I completely agree with you. We're not going to solve all of the problems that face us unless we link arms with everyone that can possibly help. And really, right now is the most opportune time. I think we have a two-year window where we have the opportunity to be linked as closely as possible with our federal counterparts. Now, we have to make sure that we're working close enough to where the president doesn't release executive orders, for example, that say we're going to consult with Alaska and with tribes, and then having that followed up by actions that have not come through consultation. So it is a two-way street. Now, they don't do a whole lot of Alaska bashing, but they are the larger sovereign in the picture. So they don't have to do any bashing. They get to make law or set direction, set policy that we don't have the authority to set. But I can't agree with you. I cannot disagree with you at all. I agree with you entirely. We have to do far more at partnering.
Yeah, and just to make it clear, you personally and Dave Kennedy get along fine.
Well, yes, indeed.
And Dave Kennedy, I want to call you in on this one to see if you might be able to picture some particular subject area that would be the what Elston is looking for, the sort of the pilot project or the one thing that the state and the feds could agree on and work together and show everyone that it even can be done.
Well, let me just start by saying, in response to your caller, that we are seeing evidence recently of just what he is suggesting taking place in the state. Craig, being one of the leaders in kind of reaching out, saying, "Hey, we got to work together and let's figure out how to do that." That is a very positive, refreshing approach that we need to take advantage of and do everything. And now I'm talking feds. I'm only speaking for myself, but I think the federal family, that we need to take advantage of that and reach out and do what we can. And I think we're trying to do that. In fact, there, you know, part of the executive order right now calls for the feds to get together and figure out how they more commonly are going to try and address issues and work closely with the state and indigenous people. And that's very well called out within the executive order. I've been to two or three meetings in the last week at the White House to talk about how we kick this thing off, how we really try and get, as a federal family, our act better together so that when we do talk, we're talking more to the extent we can with one voice. And so I think the Arctic Council, if you're looking for a specific suggestion of how we partner, might be that vehicle to show how we can better communicate, collaborate, and get on the same page in terms of Alaska being the Arctic state and then the nation, then the U.S. being an Arctic nation. How can we make sure that we get on the same page and work together to the ends of some of these priorities that we're calling out, which almost exclusively, of course, with our other Arctic nations, but exclusively are going to be carried out from the U.S. perspective within the state. So the state has to be there, and I think that's the opportunity.
Well, I'll single one out, and that is community sanitation and public health, thematic area
yes.
number three. And, you know, it's one that there's widespread concern in Alaska about sanitation and so forth and what to be what's to be done, and we've talked about it endlessly on this program. And now we have the Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge specifically mentioned. I'm glad to see that's a state initiative, and they're looking for better ways to deal with this waste. And whatever is elevated from that, there appears to be kind of a pledge that that would become something that would then be furthered on an international level. That could be pretty.
That's correct.
That could be pretty exciting.
My agency, of course, is not the lead or the expert group there. But yes, the idea is let's get together, let's figure out what are the options available to us, and try and make that an actionable way forward.
So, who'd have ever thought that wastewater could be the source of unity for state and federal relations?
I'm telling you, it's the feces sphere. I keep trying to get a question, but you can't do it. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
Alaska Pacific University offers the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1st, 2015. Alaska Pacific University is a private nonprofit offering small class sizes with a student-centered approach in the arts and sciences. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
It is Talk of Alaska. We're discussing your ideas for priorities for the Arctic Council. Well, it's been kind of fun. Dave Kennedy is Senior Advisor for the Arctic Region to NOAA. He's with us by phone from Washington. Craig Fleener, with his head cold, is with us. He is the Governor's Special Assistant for the Arctic. And we can see that, you know, I mean, this policy is actually being formed, and we almost have our hands on it here. And it's kind of fun to watch that happen. Let's see if we can connect with Tom, who joins the program from down in Homer. Tom, you've been waiting a while. You still there?
Yes, I am.
Good.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think our biggest problem is pollution, radiation and fossil fuel pollution. We have to make up our mind whether we'd rather have that than good pure drinking water. Right now, we've got the Missouri and Mississippi rivers flowing oily radioactive waste right down to the center of our country. It's time that we get serious about keeping this planet a place we can live on. That's about all I got.
All right, Tom. Yeah, there is some stuff in the Dave Kennedy. Some things about contaminants and so forth are addressed, I think, in the priorities, aren't they?
Yes, they certainly are, and in fact, we've already referenced a couple, and that's black carbon and methane.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, under ocean safety, security, and stewardship, we're looking at environmental protection in a variety of different ways, including as Arctic nations preparing for the pollution from potential oil spills. And you know, quite often the oil spill issue seems to focus on energy exploration, but one of the major discussions in most of the events that I attend is as the Northwest Passage and the Arctic ice goes away and we have more and more shipping, there's all sorts of potential just for ships that are moving back and forth through an area that they haven't before, creating pollution of one kind or another. And so there's a lot of attention being paid to how are we going to prepare ourselves for that as well. But yes, pollution is certainly kind of, I think, one of the cornerstones of the priority and discussion between the Arctic nations.
And I guess there is a kind of an effort to work with the international shippers and trying to get them to agree to some Arctic standards that might be different for the vessels. You know, I think that's mostly running through the Coast Guard.
That's correct. It's what's known as the Polar Code. And it is a set of guidelines and requirements for ships that are going to work in the Arctic that acknowledges that the Arctic is in a significantly different kind of environment. And so there's a whole suite of requirements that shippers will now have to follow related specifically to operating their vessels in Arctic waters.
In terms of the Arctic Council, though, there is an effort by, or there have been, and there are going to continue to be ongoing efforts on pollution prevention by several of the working groups. Now, there are a couple of the working groups of the Arctic Council that have a direct focus on pollution prevention, but a number of the other ones, like ones that I'm most familiar with, the Sustainable Development Working Group and Conservation of Arctic Flora and Fauna, they have a peripheral interest in keeping pollution down as well because of the impacts to the resources in their areas of interest. So it is definitely on the radar screen for the Arctic Council, all of the eight Arctic nations, the six working groups, and the six permanent participants deal with pollution issues at just about every meeting they have.
Hmm. Let's go to Homer, and Steve joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Steve.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Let's see if I can get that off speaker. Well, I have a few years in Nome. I grew up in Anchorage, but lately I've been working. I'm that guy that's on TV that came up to Nome at 211 to learn how to mine, and I've had every season there about 5 months for the last since 211, and I think that Port Clarence is to develop it as a port instead of developing Nome as a port. Makes a lot of sense because it's just a beautiful place for boats and big ones. You know, you put big ones there for, you know, out of the weather. And they're developing Nome as the deep water port and dumping a lot of money into infrastructure that they don't need to. God already made it in Port Clarence. I just want to make a pitch for that and then just listen.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Steve. A voice of experience there. And, Greg, I'm sure you're keeping an eye on that issue. It's mostly Coast Guard right now, I think.
Well, and I'm definitely learning more and more as I go along on ports and what the deep water requirements are for the different vessel sizes and the type of porting that we need for the different functions that they might serve. And very clearly, Port Clarence has been a very popular anchorage to get ships out of harm's way. And so you're right. God has made this a beautiful, perfect port. And I think that's why it's being considered and probably will continue to be considered in the future. The tough part for building a port in Western Alaska is the infrastructure that goes along with it. And finding multiple purposes for a port instead of just a place that you can park boats out of a storm. So those things are being considered. You know, do you want to invest tens of millions of dollars into creating a port that doesn't go anywhere? Or do you want to create one that has additional access opportunities? So I think those are why some of the other ones are being considered. You probably already know that, but I just wanted to make sure that the listeners are aware.
Yep. All right. Let's go down to, thank you, Steve, for that call from Homer. Very interesting. And Lou, who joins us from Gustavus, Alaska. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Lou.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate that. I've been living in Alaska for 40 years. I'm kind of a meat and potatoes kind of guy, so I'll get right down to my comments. You know, I was sitting here writing a song. I'm an artist and a songwriter. Have You Been Fracked Today? And I was listening to this report, so it kind of all fit together.
We've had fracking for a long time in Alaska. You know that, right, Lou?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. What have we been fracked with? Okay. Anyway, I want to comment first on some of the comments and the phraseology that's used. And I think it was Greg, that am I correct, that who spoke on your show? He's a guest?
Yes.
Yeah, Craig.
Okay. And I think one of the things, and I'm paraphrasing, we know we can't stop it, referring to global warming. And I would like to say, but I know we can't stop it. I think we've pretty much... you know, got the lid ready to go on the coffin, but I don't think we have to, you know, add to it. And that's enough of that. And then I just want to go on to another term for phraseology. I kind of really am confused with the term developing resources, because my 40 years here shows me that we don't develop them. What we do is we take the resources and we, you know, send them out as raw materials. That's kind of like a colony, you know, mentality, and I'd like us to start acting like a state. This old growth, you know, forest cutting that's been in the works and looks like it's going to happen, all this provides is a short-term income, and that's what we do with everything, short-term income. The oil, I mean, you know, we're in a position right now economically crying because the price of oil is down, and here we're going to try to get more oil, and I don't think that's wise learning, you know, because it's not like we're doing anything industrial. Are we going to build a refinery? Probably not. One more thing, you know, we have the charter fishing deal here in Ketchikan, Sitka, and now in Gustavus, and that's another product that goes out raw. I mean, 400 pounds per, you know, per guy. That's I eat maybe 75 pounds of fish a year, and I like fish. And you know, these guys are taking this out. So we, again, to me, that makes me think that we're like acting like a colony. We don't.
All right. Well,
we don't really manage our resources.
Well, yeah, Lou. You know, Craig's nodding his head. But the thing is, what is? Where do you get the value added? Where do you? Where do you start not extracting and keeping the wealth in the state? Any ideas?
Well, my idea is that all these jobs that happen because of this logging and the you know, the oil production and then, you know, being piped out to, you know, down below, is that there should be. I think the state needs to encourage more industrialization of the raw materials here. For a small example, is that maybe something could be done about the charter businesses here that are in the state. I don't know how it is in other areas, but here several of them now stopped using one of our only industries in Gustavus, which is the packing, cold storage, PEPS packing. And they've and in their own charter business, they've started processing these fish on their own. And to me, you know, it's all about greed. And I think we just have to stop being greedy and try to get some of the money really, and some of the long-term jobs to be in Alaska, not, you know, not short-term jobs like what happens when the trees are gone, you know, what happens when the oil is gone. And it's like we really haven't really learned a lesson. So I would hope the state would, you know, invest more in tourism, manage the fish better, think more about, you know, cutting down trees and sending them out and around, you know, to Japan or China, wherever they're going, and try to get some kind of a milling operation going here, some type of a refinery for oil, and to prohibit charter fishermen somehow from processing, you know, their own fish. I don't know if that's legal, but to me, it's kind of, you know, you come to a town like that, take the resources, it's kind of like a kick in the teeth to the one business that we do have here that is a good summer business. So, for an example, is our car fuel or gasoline here is $4.30 a gallon.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big problem. So we're talking about not only that there aren't jobs for, you know, the lower end of the people, not the one percenters that make money on these huge projects, but general population of Alaska, and not only that, but the cost of everything goes up, and, you know, wages don't, and job opportunities are slim pickings.
Yeah.
So I'd like the state to take a better look at that, and, you know, in the tourism business, and help out small communities in the advertisement of that, because that is a intrusive way of producing economy without extracting things, especially in the Arctic, which I am totally against. You know, I see what happens in the world with spills and accidents that aren't going to happen, and everybody's saying it's never going to happen here, but you know the story about that. It does.
Yep. All right,
so anyway, I think I'll just listen to your comments on that, and I appreciate your being there and accepting my phone call. And
You guys have a great day.
Okay. Thank you, Lou. Craig Fleener, you're just dying to get at this
one. Sure, I am. I've been itching to say something. Thanks a lot, Lou. Those are really good comments, and I totally agree with the concept of value added. Alaska has been a colony. I mean, if you look at what we're doing with the resources that we extract, or whatever you want to call it, the businesses that we have in Alaska, we send almost everything out in the round, whether it's fuel or fish or timber. And it is something that we need to change if we want to not be a colony any longer. We have to find a way to do it. But I think we are stuck with one reality that we have to work on fixing, and that is extreme high energy costs. It's going to be very difficult for us to take those raw products to the next stage of turning, for example, a tree into a 2x4, or a fish into smoked fish, or oil into a refined product, if we cannot afford to produce the energy that makes it viable in our state. So right now, we have to send those resources somewhere else where it is energy cost efficient to turn them into something else. So that's really the next phase for Alaska, is how we reduce energy costs across the board so we can actually afford to take things to the next level and stop being treated like a colony.
Well, it's pretty clearly a priority of the Walker administration, I would say.
Yes, he has talked, the governor has talked about value added for a long, long time and reducing energy costs. So those are very clear priorities.
Yeah.
Could I just throw one thing in? This is more Alaska centric, I understand, but there has been developed over the last few years an Arctic Economic Council, of which there are two or three entities from Alaska that participate, and I'm aware that there's been some discussion about this council actually maybe revitalize is not the right term, but rethink how it does business, and this is something that I know is so critical to the state that I think Craig in particular, but we should look into this Arctic Economic Council and see if there's anything going on within that discussion that might assist in some of the thinking here.
Yeah, well, the Canadians are pretty big on that, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, it originated there through the Canadian chairmanship, mm-hmm. and we are taking a very strong interest in the Arctic Economic Council.
All right, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
If you're not covered by health insurance, you may be eligible for financial help with monthly premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. Open enrollment ends on February 15th. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Last year, 88% of Alaskans who enrolled received financial assistance. Compare plans and see if you qualify for financial assistance. Call 211 to get free local help. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Alaska Pacific University now offers the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. More at 1-800-272-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
We're talking about priorities for the Arctic Council, an international diplomatic body that the United States is about to chair. And with us is Dave Kennedy, Senior Advisor for the Arctic Region for NOAA, and Craig Fleener, the Governor Bill Walker Special Assistant for the Arctic. And Craig opened up by saying, what's Arctic about Alaska? What isn't Arctic about Alaska? And Dave Kennedy, you can kind of say the same thing when it comes to NOAA. There's just so many different things that NOAA does that are completely, are very, very Arctic involved. One that immediately comes to mind, and I know it's in the priorities and I didn't want to lose track of, is the Weather Service and what might be done during the United States chairmanship with better weather information and so forth.
Yes. Absolutely. When you think about kind of the backbone for so many, if not all, of the discussions and deliberations about what's to happen in the Arctic, so much of that is based on good science and monitoring and observation, and turning all of that information into usable products and services for those that have to make the decisions. And the Weather Service is right in the middle of that. And one of the things that the Weather Service, or a couple of three things that the Weather Service is looking at very carefully, is that product to user, to operations, and in particular, two of the focus areas are how to better predict sea ice. That's a very complicated process. It requires a tremendous amount of expertise, but it also requires the best in terms of observations. That holds true for weather as well. And in both of those cases, we have limited observations. So there's going to be a very strong push to see what we can do to get better observations, to get better models, so that we can better predict when the sea ice will leave or not be there. But as I say, also just weather and storms in general. And this applies to so many things, including some of the discussion within the Arctic Council about resiliency and adaptation of villages to the changes in climate and sea ice and inundation and sea level rise and all the rest. And so, yes, Weather Service is deeply involved and will be a player as the council moves forward, because it has so much critical information to provide.
And another one I wanted to be sure and bring up is the mapping. It's
yes.
Kind of a simple thing. But
I held my tongue when we were talking about ports and shipping and economics, but NOAA is responsible for the charts that the ships use to move through the marine waters. And the charts, because of the ice and a variety of other issues, are far out of date. And NOAA has an Arctic charting priority list, and we've matched that up pretty carefully with what the Coast Guard has put forward. So when you talk about the Bering Straits, this is an area and the new sea routes, this is an area that NOAA is working closely with the Coast Guard to make sure that we do the charts. So as they establish the navigational routes, we are updating the charts so that they have better accurate information as they move. But some of the charts in the Arctic are still lead line based, and for those that don't know lead line, that's throwing a rope with knots and a lead weight on the end of it over the side and then measuring the depth of the water.
It still works.
So they still work, but we have much better technology, and we're hoping to get into the Arctic in the next couple of 3 years and do a lot more charting.
Hey, David, why don't you tell us the name of the guy that did some of the first lead lines in Alaska?
You're going to have to help me. Who is that?
Captain Cook.
Oh, that guy. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Let's go to Homer and Dave. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Dave. Hello, Dave. Dave Homer. Yeah, that's you.
Dave in Cordova.
Oh, I'm sorry. It says, okay, you're in Cordova then, Dave.
Yeah, okay, yeah. You're talking my lingo here this morning. And good morning, gentlemen, and shout out to L. Stun there in Anchorage. I've of course, got many years up in the Arctic Ocean sailing, as well as working up in Prudhoe years and years ago. And as far as the Bering Straits and that is concerned, in my mind, that's pretty well charted. The Arctic, of course, is something quite different. Regarding Port Clarence versus Nome, it's a no-brainer. Nome will have to be dredged every year, and it'll have to be dredged to even make a port there. But it's only going to be an ongoing issue with dredging, which is going to be a huge cost every year. Getting back to cheap enough energy to start developing some of this stuff, and I've been pushing this for quite a while, and that we should have, while we had money, and possibly get it going at some point in time, is a natural gas infrastructure in Western Alaska and all of coastal Alaska, for that matter, if we could ever pull it off, and have facilities there that could take LNG, CNG, and make it available. It can go up the rivers. You can get it to a hub. Basically, natural gas is our solution if we can find the least expensive route with which to get it in there.
Yeah, and David, I'm sure you are well aware that the governor's pushing that.
Right, and power the ferries with it, like Norway's been doing it with their merchant marine, and everybody else is going to. It's our source. Regarding over towards Canada and the pollution that was mentioned earlier, start checking the mouth of the Mackenzie River for what's coming down from the Alberta tar sands, because that's been leaching out into that Athabasca River for years. I'm kind of wound up because there were so many points to cover, and of course I can't cover them all. But
you got two minutes left here.
We will be watching this as interested observers, all of us, and thanks everybody for their hard work at it.
All right. Thank you so much, Dave. Craig Fleener, you want to chime in on that?
Oh, I was just saying thank you. Those are good points. There's another alternative that I've heard about recently for electrifying the state, and that is to build a power plant on the North Slope and run wire to folks. And I don't know much about that, and I was just bringing that up as an alternative.
Yeah, Mira Kohler has brought that one up on this show from time to time. Yeah,
right. It's something that I think is worth looking into as well.
Judy in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I've got about a minute.
Oh, hello. This is I wanted to talk about oil spill response starting in the Aleutians. Dave Kennedy and I first met during the Exxon Valdez spill, as a matter of fact, and it's great to hear you're back in the game, Dave. And
thank you so much.
And I've been working on a project that I think is right up the alley of what you're referring to, trying to find opportunities for the feds to help coordinate on some of our Arctic Council priorities, one of which is obviously the oil spill response agreement that's already been written by the Arctic Council. But Alaska is very short on capability to support that agreement. And if we could get Coast Guard support for an alternative compliance plan in the Aleutians that gives shippers what they need, a plan that allows them to use their insurance cover, then we'd be doing a great service to support of the Arctic Council initiative.
Okay. That's Dave Kennedy. You got about 30 seconds to respond there.
Well, I'm very familiar with what she's talking about. The Coast Guard needs to be the player there, and I know they have a new commander of the Coast Guard in the 17th District who is very active and supportive, and
Great.
He's someone who ought to be
thanks
approached on that.
All right. Thanks, Craig Fleener, and thank you very much, Dave Kennedy, and thanks to all our callers. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Enroll now in the health insurance marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly costs and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the health insurance marketplace. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.